You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Don't sweat the technique. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You ever seen these water bottles that had like this flap lid instead of like a regular lid that you just spin off? It's like a kind of like a hybrid water bottle. It's awful. It's one of the stupidest inventions I've ever seen.
I haven't seen that
cap back on.
No, it's like a cap. It's weird.
I haven't seen that one exactly like that, but some of the nicer, like the sports bottles, will have that little tab that you flip up and down, but I hate that. Yeah, give me one that can screw up completely.
The kids have to bring their own water to school, and now that's all the rage. It's the Stanleys and the different ways that you can either use the straw, there's a straw cover, and the flip, and all that.
It's kind of bougie. Little kids bringing Stanleys to school.
My kid gets money for the holidays, and the first thing she wants to do is buy another Stanley. I'm like, you got three. What do we care about?
How old is she?
Nine.
That's crazy. Nine-year-olds asking for Stanleys.
Stanleys are the thing. I didn't realize.
Yeah, that is weird. 713-780-ESPN. Astros signed Brendan Rodgers to a minor league contract yesterday and an invitation to spring training. Is there anything here?
A big jump from being a producer in Chicago, right?
What's that?
It's a big jump from being a producer in Chicago and one-time producer of the
Killer Bees. I don't think I like that joke.
No?
No. Plus, his name was not Rodgers. It was Riley.
I get it.
I'm not sure you do.
I do.
All right. What did you think of the signing?
I was surprised. I looked at his numbers. They're not bad. I mean, do I think that he probably, and they say he's a defensive specialist, but if he can hit better than Dubon, then at least you have options at second base. If you're truly hell-bent on staying with Altuve in left field, I don't mind kicking the tires and seeing what he's got.
Yeah, for me, it's low risk, so who cares? It's a minor league deal with an invitation to spring training, so who cares? Like, sign all of those guys and see if they can help your team. So the fact that it's so low risk, don't care. Now, to buzzkill this a little bit, I did see a lot of people like, oh, this is a great pickup. And again, look, fine, shrewd. Maybe he can help you. If not, then you cut him and there's no big deal. I think there's a decent chance he doesn't make the team. I think there's a 60-40 chance he makes it, 40% chance he does not make it. His numbers overall do look pretty good. But then when you dive into them, is this guy a Coors Field baby? Last year, home games for Brendan Rodgers, 328 average, 888 OPS at home. What did he do on the road? 214 average, 571 OPS. That is atrocious. Well, that's just a one-season sample, Branham. No, it's not. Career numbers at home, 306 average, 826 OPS. Career numbers away from Coors Field, 227 average, 628 OPS. The defense was good a few years ago. He's now a negative defensive player as recently as last year. Was that just a blip in the radar and he can revert back to being a good defensive player? Maybe. Possible. That's why you bring him into spring training and find out. I don't think Brendan Rodgers is an upgrade to what you currently have. Now, is it worth the risk to find out? Of course. You're not paying him anything. Do I think he would improve the bench? Yes, whether that means Zach DiZinzo starts the year in AAA, and Joe Espada has mentioned that he doesn't want his youngsters to sit the bench. He wants them playing every day. Okay, well, maybe that's why you bring in Brendan Rodgers, so Zach DiZinzo can play every day. Maybe it means John Singleton gets cut. I don't really think that's the case because I think they're going to want Singleton's left-handed bat on the bench since it's a super right-handed lineup. So while I think it's a fine pickup, It's a minor league deal, so who cares? I don't think that the reaction to Brendan Rodgers is accurate to what he actually brings in. Also, ask yourself this. The Rockies could have brought Brendan Rodgers back for cheap. They non-tendered him. That's not a great look that you're being non-tendered by your team. He didn't sign until February 18th. That's not a great sign that you're, you know, well-coveted around Major League Baseball. And the contract he signed was only a minor league deal. So I think it speaks to the value of Brendan Rodgers. Can it help your bench? Potentially. Is it worth kicking the tires to see if he upgrades you? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to be a major contributor for the Astros in 2025? Not by a long shot.
Yeah, this is interesting. It's almost, to me, I'm always been the kick the tires and see what you got. And hopefully you find a guy that maybe can find something, do something different, new, and with a fresh start, gets a chance and has a good spring, and there's a guy that gives you a good problem to have. If not, then you can walk away from it. It's almost like when the Texans went out and got Skronik, and you're like, oh, well, that guy's played in the league before, and he might have some talent, but if it goes your direction, you don't lose anything in the process, but you find out that he just, whether you know it was later in his career, or in this case, maybe it's just he's fallen off, that it doesn't work out, but as long as it doesn't cost you anything at all, I'm all for this kind of move, because if the back and forth we had a few weeks ago means that they truly are done and they're not willing to spend money right now, at least from this perspective, it's a big upside, you know, very little low side to try it.
I would argue it's not a big upside.
Okay, there's a chance.
I would argue that he could potentially share time at second base. You know, maybe he outproduces Mauricio Dubon, which isn't out of the realm of possibility. Like, Dubon's not a great offensive – he's not a good offensive player. He's not an average offensive player, Mauricio Dubon. But Dubon, I think, at this stage of their careers, is a much better defensive player. Yes, I know Rodgers won a gold glove in 2022, but he's went backwards there. If we assume this is it for the Astros, they are done with their offseason, how do you think they did? How do you think they fared in this offseason?
I mean, overall, I would probably go – B minus. I think that the fact that they were willing to do what a lot of people didn't want them to do and didn't think that they would do, and kind of right in the middle of the negotiation process and before Bregman had even made up his mind, kind of already created their backup plan and then locked it in and got two corner infielders that can really do a lot to upgrade your team or at least maintain your team on an infield perspective, I give them a lot of credit for. I just think that I would have a higher grade for them if they would have addressed the one glaring need that we still talk about that I still wish they did, which was a bat in the outfield.
They added the greatest Houston Astro of all time to the outfield. Mm-hmm.
I know.
They did.
Mm-hmm. And as you know, I have reservations about that move.
The greatest Astro of all time is now playing outfield. That's good. That's not good enough for you guys. It's not good enough. They need to be better. Well, how about we move the greatest Astro ever to the outfield? Nope, not good enough. It's not good enough. I'm just kidding. It's kind of rearranging the chairs on the Titanic. I get it. You go from, you know, having a weak offensive left fielder to a weak offensive second baseman. It's kind of, from an offensive standpoint, it's the same thing. I do think people get way too caught up in the starting nine, though. Like, I think Joe Espada is going to be mixing and matching every single game. Like, how many games has Ben Gamble start this year? Assuming health, obviously. I think Gamble starts 90 games, 100 games.
I was going to say between 60 and 70.
See, I think there's a chance he starts every single game against right-handed pitching.
Maybe.
And if he does that, he's starting north of 100 games. How many games is Jake Myers starting? How many games is Chaz McCormick starting? Like, I think Espada is going to have to manage his tail off this year.
I think it's also something that excites, you know, any kind of analytics type manager loves this, to have the working pieces that you can overthink the hell out of this to try and get the best matchups.
Yeah. Oh, he's gonna be micromanaging. I think he has to, though. Texter, Rodgers has never lived up to his expectations. That's a fact. I mean, you don't go from being the third overall pick yeah. Right after Alex Bregman to being non-tendered. Like, think about that. Like, he's available for cheap. All you have to do is pick up the option on him, and you non-tender him. It's what the Astros did with Jose Urquidy. The Astros didn't non-tender Jake Myers. They didn't non-tender Chaz McCormick. They non-tendered Jose Urquidy. So that's kind of the level where Brendan Rodgers is viewed. Signed a minor league contract. Didn't sign until February 18th. Let's not overrate Brendan Rodgers. Does it help the bench? I think it helps the bench. Does it give you an option at second base in case there's injuries, give you more depth there? It does. You know, Brendan Rodgers on the bench instead of Shea Whitcomb. Okay.
I like that.
That upgrades the bench. Yeah, like, yeah. That's why I think it's a fine move. But do I think Brendan Rodgers is going to come in and hit 25 home runs and bat sixth and play second base every day?
But maybe to your point, if Dubon's going to be more of an everyday starter, then he becomes your Dubon. I mean, he's not going to be an outfielder, but at least you've got a guy, like you said, better than the guys that I think that you've brought off the bench in the last couple of years, and the Gray Kessingers of the world and those type guys. Mm-hmm. You've got an experienced major league guy that's gotten enough at-bats to where you possibly have an upgrade.
And I was real critical of Dana Brown for not upgrading the bench last year. So this kind of moves, I have to applaud. Now, I think he'd probably be the backup second baseman, and then it allows Dubon to move around. Like, Dubon's probably your primary second baseman. But then if Pena needs a day off, Dubon plays short, Rodgers plays second. If Isak needs a day off, Dubon plays third, Rodgers plays second. So, like, Rodgers wouldn't be your utility guy, but having him on the bench allows Dubon to be both your primary second baseman and your utility guy. So I like it from that sense, but let's not overrate the signing here. A texter, Altuve, 80 games at DH. Boy, I hope not, because if Jose Altuve DHs for 80 games, that means something has seriously went wrong with Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
It's on the IL.
Yeah, and we've already talked about it, and we've talked about the fact the Astros have talked about it. It doesn't look like it was a year ago when they wanted Yordan to play about 50% of the games in left field. Now they're basically talking like he shouldn't be in left field. So, yeah, I would hope that scenario doesn't play out.
Other texter, knowing I would say that this Astros offseason too, by the way, I would say that it was courageous. Like, that's how I view it. I think it was a good one. Like, I think that, like, how do you define who wins a trade? In my opinion, who wins a trade is who gets the most war from a player, from the players, the package of the players, while with the remainder of club control. So, like, Chicago traded for Kyle Tucker with 1 year left on his contract. So Kyle Tucker's war this year, I will use that to compare it to what Isak Paredes, Hayden Wesneski, and Cam Smith do with their years of club control. I think the Astros are going to win that trade. If that's how you define who wins a trade, looking at the war that they bring to a team, I think the Astros will get more with Isak Paredes' years of club control, Hayden Wesneski's years of club control, and Cam Smith's years of club control. I think they'll get more war with that trio than the Cubs will get with 1 year of Kyle Tucker. So I think it's a win of a trade. I give them credit for not, you know, they drew their line in the sand with Alex Bregman, which I think was a contract that was higher than I would be comfortable with. So I'm happy they didn't sign him or even up their offer and overpay for him even more. So I found that to be courageous. You don't bring back Justin Verlander, which, you know, maybe that was an easy decision, but courageous. Like, a guy that has helped you a lot, arguably the greatest Astros starting pitcher of all time. Moving Altuve to left field, like, they are making bold moves that I applaud them for.
What'd you grade them?
Courageous.
No, but you gave him a letter.
I gave him a C for courageous, or okay. I can give him a B for bravado, or a C for cojones. I think they won the Tucker trade. You can't say it with a matter of fact right now. I think they will win the Kyle Tucker trade, and I grade trades based on the war of years of club control versus each other. So I think the Astros win that. Like the Yusei Kikuchi trade. That one's going to be close because Kikuchi was great for the Astros. Great. And I also think that the prospects that they traded to Toronto aren't great. Like, I don't think Joey Loprofito is an everyday outfielder. We'll see about Jake Bloss. But even Jake Bloss is probably a bottom-of-the-rotation starter. Wagner can hit, which, you know, maybe he could have locked up second base. But, so that's probably the wild card in that trade.
And even if you go if you don't go as deep into war and you just say, because we've talked about this in the past, when you look at the Greinke trade and the Verlander trades and things like that, and you can just look at it and say, look, the first Verlander trade, no one came out of that made you even raise an eyebrow to say, damn, you gave up that. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that from the standpoint of the Astros doing something they haven't shown that they were willing to do in the past, which is trade a guy a year before you're probably going to let him walk out the door because you're not going to give him the money that he wants. This time they got something for one of their guys doing that, and it looks like they got some significant pieces that could turn into something. I applaud that because we were talking before the offseason hit about trading one, if not both, of Tucker and Fromber. And the fact that they were willing to do it with Kyle Tucker shows some stones, and I applaud that. I like what the fact that instead of just sitting there and being at the mercy of Alex Bregman and Scott Boras, that they went, you know, they saw how the negotiation started, where it was going, probably kind of assumed where it was going to end up, and made sure they had a backup plan so they weren't left holding the bag when he got his bag elsewhere. I love all those things. I just think that a team that has been this competitive and Jim Crane's been willing to spend the extra, it does, and I understand what you're saying about the competitive, you know, with the picks, But at the same time, I would have upgraded that grade to an A if they would have gotten another bat.
How significant of a bat, though? Like, would Hayward wouldn't have done it?
No, he wouldn't have done it.
Would have Anthony Santander?
Oh, and at one point,
you would have lost a pick, though. You would have lost another competition.
You would have lost a pick, but you would have had a replacement for him, for Tucker, for years to come that looked, that would be a significantly respected outfield piece.
So, I don't disagree with you. Now, Kyle Tucker has 1 year with the Cubs. Do you think that Kyle Tucker in the final year with Chicago will have more or less or fewer, Paul, WAR than Hayden Wesneski, Isak Paredes, Cam Smith controllable years with the Astros?
Oh, I think he'll have less.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
And I, to me, that's how you win a trade. Like, and at the same, we'll do the same thing with Kikuchi. Like, whenever, and look, it's going to take a while because the Blue Jays had those guys for 6 years. The Astros had Kikuchi for a couple of months, but whose WAR is going to be greater in that trade? Is it going to be the few months that you had, the 2 months that you had Kikuchi, or is it going to be? Forgot about that. I missed that. Or is it going to be the years of Blas, the years of Wagner, the years of Loperfido? I think it's a chance. It's Kikuchi because I don't love any of the prospects that the Astros gave up. Wagner's my favorite.
Yeah, and I look at it also from the perspective of in doing what you did. If Cam Smith truly becomes an aircraft carrier and he ends up being a big cornerstone to your franchise going forward, then it's a massive win. But even if he's just a productive outfielder and you get something from, and Wisniewski's your fifth starter, then you've already come a long way because the Cubs have the challenge of having to re-sign Tucker, or they only get 1 year out of their return, and you get however many controllable years you keep one, two, or three of those players.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. Should Yordan's numbers by spot in the batting order influence your thought on where he should bat in said batting order? And maybe if we get crazy, maybe some expected WOBA talk. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Found the Killer Bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Knowing that the Astros don't give long contracts or big money, do y'all think that discourages young star free agents from coming here?
I think winning cures everything. I think that you heard from, look, you heard from Walker. He said it that, you know, he really liked the way that they, you know, what they did the last several years and that winning mattered to him. And that's why he came here. I think that because they win, as long as they can stay consistent with their winning, I think you'll still get people to come here. But I think it'll be the reality that players know I'm not coming here and I'm not looking for a six-year deal because it's not going to happen.
I think money cures everything. I think you overvalue winning for free agents. I think free agents more often than not go to the best contract.
I think that if you're looking at two teams with similar money, then the winning does mean something.
Yeah, I think winning could be used to break a tie-ish. I think that's fair.
Because I think in free agency, for the most part, unless you're guys that are on the downside of their career, guys know they're going to get their bag.
Yeah, but like the question, the Astros don't give long contracts or big money. Did that prevent Jose Abreu from signing with the Astros? No. Did it prevent Josh Hader from signing with the Astros? No. What prevented those guys from signing with the Astros? Long, big money contracts.
Because they got top of the market.
Yeah. Like the Astros are not going to be players on the 6 year, $250 million. They're not going to be players on the Sotos of the world, the Kyle Tuckers when he comes available. Their philosophy is they're willing to give you pretty high AAV. I mean, Jose Abreu was top AAV the year that he came out as a first baseman. Josh Hader was top AAV as a closer the year that he was a free agent. But they're just not going to give out 6-7 year deals. And I applaud them for that. I wouldn't do it either. I think it's stupid. I think it's bad business.
Well, look at it. We've talked about it. Of the guys that have walked out the door, maybe short of Cole, but most of the guys that have walked out the door, they haven't lived up to their contracts, especially the big core guys that we talk about, like Springer, like Correa. When you look at it, I don't think that they've come. I think it's a completely wise decision on their part to walk away and stay away from those deals.
Would you sign Tucker after next year? I think I just gave my answer.
I would not.
I just don't like those big contracts. If Melton has a good spring, do y'all think he can be on the MLB roster opening day?
I mean, is it a possibility? Yes. You just heard Joe Espada say, though, that, you know, that he's not going to want his young players wasting away on the bench to be what, a backup outfielder and pinch runner. I mean, he'd rather getting him every day at bats and playing the outfield.
Yeah, I think if he hit 450 with, you know, an OPS of 1200, I still don't think he makes the roster. I think the earliest we see Jacob Melton's in the summer of this season, and I think he's going to have to tear the cover off the ball in AAA. I don't think there's anything Melton can do to make this team.
Yeah, like saying that he can make it out of spring, I think overvalues spring production. Like, we'd have to honestly see, like, okay, is he facing another major league pitcher, or is he facing, like, guys in a split squad with, you know, players who are going to end up in single A after spring break? So it depends, I guess, a little bit on the competition, but overall spring numbers, I just don't put much into them, so I would say no.
Yeah, remember Justin Dearden had like that massive year 2 years ago, and they kept Corey Jolks instead of Dearden. Everybody's like, what are they doing? And then Dearden's out of baseball a year and a half later. Like, spring training numbers
do not matter.
They don't matter. So I don't think there's anything Melton can do to make this team. Now, I'll be watching him early in the year in AAA. Like, I'll be watching Cam Smith maybe in AAA. I bet you he starts in AA. We'll see. And then I'll be watching Bryce Matthews, because I think those are the three offensive players that could get called up this season to help this team. I don't think it's out of camp, though. I think the earliest you see any of those guys, and all of them would have to be going nuts offensively, would be in the summer.
Yeah, I think Blue Ball kind of falls into that deal, too.
Yeah, we're talking about offense.
I know, but I'm saying another guy that you're going to keep an eye on that's probably close.
I don't think that they like Blue Ball as much as you think. Like, my reading of the situation, I think they like Gusto more. I think they like Gordon more. And I even think they like the Ulloa guy more. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Blue Ball in the mix, but I think they like those other three arms better. Like, if all those guys were healthy and all those guys were rested and they needed a spot start, I think Blue Ball would be the fourth of those guys.
I mean, and you and I saw him pitch in person, and it was a quirky delivery, and it was a little different. But, I mean, I know that he's, you know, high in terms of where he ranks within the system. But I think with that being said, you know, Wisniewski's going to get the first shot at the fifth starter, and everybody else is going to have a chance later on down the road if they're still looking.
I'm curious where Blue Ball ranks Astros starter. Look it up during the break. 713-780-ESPN. Who cares about the pick that may or may not work out? And I get tired of people saying Crane spends plenty when you see other billionaires overspending him by leaps and bounds. Another outfielder was not a big ask. They moved the greatest Astro of all time to the outfield. Is that not enough for you?
Are you not entertained?
Sassy.
How's that not enough? Greatest Astro ever. It's an F. They bombed in everything. The Astros just made the list. Laughing emoji, laughing emoji. They can't make the list yet.
You just made the list.
They can't make the list yet.
Also, that's gimmick infringement, saying F. That's John McClane's gimmick.
Is that what he does?
I think he owes McClane a little fee there.
I don't think he got it.
F minus. Pathetic. Oh.
Is there a chance you see Pedro Leon up in the majors permanently?
No.
We saw him last year, and we saw enough of him to say that he wasn't going to stick.
He's not a major league player.
It feels like they're not fans of him. It feels like they're not Pedro Leon fans. He got caught up last year, had a cup of coffee, and then got sent down pretty quickly.
Had a couple oopsies, too, in the outfield and base running. And, yeah, he just looked like he wasn't ready for it.
Yeah, I don't think he's a big leaguer. Hopefully I'm wrong. Texter, Melton or Myers? For me, it's Jake Myers this year. Jake Myers plays you a gold glove level defensive center field, which is a premium defensive position. Let's not understate the value of that. And he hits lefties well. I'd much rather go into the season with Jake Myers over Jacob Melton.
I think based on where you are as a team and what your expectations are, I don't think that you're going Melton this year. You're going with experience. You're going with guys that have been there and done that.
I mean, you hope Melton eventually passes him up, but not to start the year.
Yeah, I think that's a situation where you're definitely starting with the defensive guy. And then if all the questions on the offense hit the negative side of it and you're desperate need of a bat and Jacob Melton's hitting well in AAA, then you make the move late May, early June. But that's not an out-of-camp move.
No, not an out-of-camp move. I am, I think, I hate to put myself in this situation. I think this city undervalues Jake Myers. I really do. He plays a great defensive center field. It is a very important defensive position. It is at least one of the top three most important defensive positions. He plays it to a gold glove level, was a gold glove finalist last year. He hits lefties pretty good, doesn't hit righties that well. But you can do far worse than Jake Myers. I feel like we don't appreciate Jake Myers enough, and I hate that I'm having to argue this, but I got to call a spade a spade. You Astro fans don't appreciate Jake Myers enough.
I think I appreciate him more than enough, and I don't really...
You're not a fan.
I'm not a fan. So
you don't like defense.
That's not true. I don't like it. I think his arm sucks.
Yeah,
I think,
but that's the least important thing for an outfielder.
I still have seen him take bad angles at baseballs. Yes, I understand he's an above-average defender.
No, he's almost great.
Okay,
above-average is selling him short.
That's in your opinion.
And the opinion of baseball people had him as a finalist for Gold Glove, and also the facts of the defensive metrics that back that up.
I've seen enough of Jake to think that he should be an everyday center fielder on this baseball team.
He should be or shouldn't be?
I don't think he should be.
I think Jake Meyers is a top 20 everyday center fielder in baseball because of his defense. I mean, he's really good defensively. I feel like the city underappreciates it. It is definitely, he's definitely an Adam Everett type of player. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. That's a good comp, different position, good comp. Sure. Adam Everett.
I was very anti-Adam Everett.
Adam Everett in his Astro years was a top 20 shortstop in baseball because of his defense alone.
I think
at a premium defensive position. It's different if he's playing left field.
Sure. I think this is a lineup conversation more so than it is a conversation about the individual player. Because I think Adam Everett in 2004, when that lineup was stacked, when you had Carlos Beltran, when you had Jeff Kent, when Bagwell's arm wasn't as fully removed as it became a year later. Like, when that lineup was rolling and Everett was one of, like, 2 weak spots in the lineup, okay, let's take the defensive guy because the offensive lineup is so good, you can afford it. I think the same conversation applies to Jake Meyers, and that's kind of why I think the whole conversation with Jacob Melton depends on the performance of the lineup. Like, if the offensive lineup, 1 through 6, all the question marks hit the upside, mm-hmm. then you could probably deal with the liability at the plate and keep playing the defensive specialist like Jake Meyers. Mm-hmm. But if the offensive hits the negative side, then you're going to have to search for a bat.
I agree with that. I think it's a valid point. 75, part of being a great defender is having an arm, J-Bone. Yes, but arm is one of the least important attributes for an outfielder. Does it matter? Of course, everything matters. But would you rather have a cannon of an arm, or would you rather have incredible range in center field? Do you want Chaz McCormick or Yordan Alvarez in center field? Or would you rather have Jake Meyers or Yordan Alvarez in center field? Yordan Alvarez has got a cannon. Do you want him in center field? Do you? No. So you're telling me, by answering the question no, that arm in center is not that important. Yes, it matters. No one's saying it doesn't matter. But if you're looking for an arm in center field, just play Yordan Alvarez out there. If you're telling me that's what you're looking for, Yordan, go play center field. There's your arm in center field.
I mean,
that proves the point that arm is down the list of most important attributes for a center fielder. Give me range, give me speed, give me a guy who's going to catch the baseball. Arm is down the list. Otherwise, Yordan could play
center. For sure in center. I mean, look, in your corner outfielders, that's why, you know, that matters even more so, because those are the guys that are supposed to have cannons or at least be able to throw guys out. But in center field, yeah, range is the first and most important thing.
713-780-ESPN. Some folks have some thoughts about this. 713-780-3776. Is Jake Meyers underappreciated in the city of Houston? I can't believe we're having this conversation. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Jake Meyers, polarizing figure. 713-780-ESPN. Here is the two sides of the spectrum when it comes to Jake Meyers, which sometimes looks like he is on the spectrum. But Rocky says Meyers is absolute dog poop emoji. Chris on YouTube says Meyers was top five in outs above average for center fielders last year. Meyers might be one of those computer guys. We're like, computer guys like him, analytical guys like him, and then the old eye test don't really
like
him.
Analytics.
Yeah. Which side of that do you think David Culley's on? Who knows analytics?
I know analytics has those things out there.
Yeah. Rocky says, you know what I mean, Mr. Grammar Police, grow up. Oh, he's not talking to me. He's talking to somebody in the chat. Yeah, we're not grammar police around here.
No, we're very anti-grammar.
We're anti-grammar.
Police.
Yeah, we don't. We're Tweedledee, Tweedledum. Did I say that right? I'm not sure they did. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Astro fans are the worst. People act like they were a ton of outfielders available this season. We always have a top 10 payroll. That's Keith. Somebody posted a graphic on Twitter, too. They were comparing Alex Verdugo to Jake Meyers this last year, which might not be fair because Verdugo had a down year. Didn't like that he had to shave his face, I guess. But Myers had double the WAR of Alex Verdugo. A lot of that is probably on the defensive side. But then you look at OPS plus. Jake Myers had a better OPS plus than Alex Verdugo did last year. Now, it wasn't good. 85, not good. Verdugo was 83, but greater than.
I prefer to compare Jake Myers to Verdugo in Boston because he was a – I mean, he was never obviously
– never great.
What if we just look up career?
Sure, that's fine.
What if we just look just up like, career?
It feels like last year, not that Verdugo was ever like a tremendous player, especially at the plate. He's, I mean, he hit for decent average, but not a lot of pop.
Yeah, Verdugo, but, OPS plus in his career, 101. Myers is 86. But so Verdugo plus...
Verdugo above average defensive outfielder, right?
Depends on the year. Depends on the year.
Because, I mean, up until going into the Yankees season, a lot of people thought that he was one of the better defense, a better than average defensive outfielder.
Pretty average. And he's playing right instead of center, which is the premium defensive position. And that's why Myers' WAR is higher, because he plays center field and plays it at a high level. And Verdugo plays right field and does it average, depending on the year.
Do we feel like Chaz is how far away is Chaz from Jake defensively in center field?
If we're rating this on a scale of 1 to 10, I would have Jake at about an 8.5. I'd probably have Chaz around a 7.
See, I think that Chaz gives you the potential. Again, last year is tough to deal with, but I believe Chaz gives you the potential to be a pretty good improvement offensively, and I don't think you lose that much defensively if Chaz is your center fielder. I really want Chaz to play center.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see how they play, because if Chaz plays like he did last year, he doesn't belong on the roster.
Right.
So that's why I want to see it play out. I do think they should be fighting for that job against each other, though, mm-hmm. especially against righties. Because I want Ben Gamble to be in right field against righties. Like, I want his bat in the lineup. The Astros need left-handed bats. I want Gamble to play most games against right-handed pitching. So what does that mean for Chaz and Myers if Altuve's penciled into left field? They need to be fighting for that job. Top 20 center fielder, that's not saying a whole lot. No, it's not a massive bar, but I think if you polled Astro fans, people would be like, oh, Jake Myers is not a top 20 center fielder. Or I think he is. Another one asking how high of a prospect is Walker Yannick? Wasn't he supposed to be an extremely highly rated catcher coming out of college? He did not have a good start to his pro career. Offensively, he was dreadful, but small sample.
We're talking about, what, a month and a half?
Yeah, he's a very good defensive player. I think his bat will play at the catcher position. I saw him play quite a bit in college. I think he's a pretty... How that develops into the big leagues, time will tell. But I think Yannick's bat will be good enough to play at the bigs at some point, and I think his defense could already play.
Don't they think that, his defense and his arm, right? His arm's supposed to be pretty damn good, too.
Yeah, he's got a good arm.
Yeah.
Aaron, it's frustrating watching Myers at the plate with runners in scoring position, not a clutch batter. No, he's not known for his bat. His bat is not the reason. Top 20 initially sounds like a compliment, but it isn't that below average to average. Relative to starting center fielders, it's below average. Relative to all center fielders at the big league level, it's above average. So it kind of depends on how you're asking that question. 713-780-3776, out to the HRP listener line. Philip, you're in the Hive. What's going on, Philip?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to point out, and then I tend to be a little more optimistic, a bit of a Pollyanna on the outfielders. Just from, hey, you never know, maybe McCormick is, like he was a couple years ago, gets healthy and does something, but... I'm not saying you rely on that, and I get the hedging and splitting and platooning guys try to get the most out of them. But my whole thing is basically the outfielders are going to be our 7, 8, 9 hitters, and I just don't feel like they're that much worse than most teams when you compare 7, 8, 9 hitters. We did get rid of the giant hole at first base and just shifted it to the outfield, and quite frankly, it's going to be easier to find a corner outfielder at the trade deadline if needed than a first baseman if what they do is not working. And there's always this small chance that you get one of these guys like Melton or Cam Smith light it up in Double-A like a Jeremy Pena or Yordan before, and maybe they barely touch Triple-A or skip over it altogether, and you get them for a call-up, and you get lucky a little bit with the young bat, similar to what the Rangers did with Evan Carter a couple years ago. It gives you a little spark, and maybe you get lucky. But I'm more of a wait-and-see approach. I don't think it's all doom and gloom. If these guys are your three worst hitters and everybody else, you have six average or better hitters in the lineup, and you have the pitching that you think you're going to have, granted, no injuries and all that, it might be all right. And we'll just kind of see what they can squeeze out of these guys. That's all. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
I think you're going to have a 1-8-9 outfield, right? If Altuve's in left?
Yeah, I don't think Philip was accounting for Altuve in left field, but if Altuve's in left field, it wouldn't be 7-8-9.
Yeah, I just think that, yeah, we talked about when you had Maldi as just the absolute, you know, easy out at the 9 spot, and now you've got two guys probably at the bottom of it. Your best hope is that Chaz seems to be more capable of finding it again, and hopefully he can. I don't have trust in Jake offensively. And yeah, look, there's prospects that, you know, whether it's Trammell, who was a highly rated pick when the Yankees originally took him, if there's expectations for a guy like that, to his scenario, maybe you get a guy that just has a massive spring. I'm just not expecting it. I hope Gamble could be at least as consistent as he was at the end of the year before he broke his leg, to where you can use him in a platoon situation. That'd be great.
I don't think Trammell was going to make the team. I hope, maybe I'm selling him so short and he's going to surprise me. I had somebody tweet at me an interesting scenario too, that he played most of his big league games in Seattle, where everybody stinks in Seattle. You look at his numbers away from Seattle, still not good, but better. I would be surprised if he makes the team when you start looking at the numbers. Maybe he'll surprise me. Maybe he'll shock me. Now, I think Phillip's point is a good point. I think it's a good call. They would love if one of those prospects could be an everyday outfielder by August 1st, whether it's Cam Smith just knocking the cover off the baseball that forces his way in the line. They would love for him to take over right field by August 1st. And Dana wouldn't have any hesitation doing that if he proves he can hit the minor league level. And I think the same thing holds true for Jacob Melton. I think they'll be looking for them to make the big league roster if they can be one of the starting outfielders. I don't think that they're going to be like, no, service time, no, he's not ready. I think they'll aggressively, if they're performing, I think they'll be aggressive with Cam Smith and Melton trying to call him up, especially if the outfield's underproducing. If the outfield's underproducing, it also throws a wrench into that, ETA calculation.
It's the greatest win-win possible. Dana looks like a genius if Cam Smith just gets on that terror path to get to the major leagues and explodes on the scene once he gets there, then Dana looks so as good as you can look as a general manager, because he made the trade and then the guy was able to fill the void that at least I think that they have after their offseason, and that it all benefits the organization. So yeah, I mean, I would love to see Cam Smith be ready right out of camp. That would be fantastic, but am I expecting it? No,
I think the most optimistic, realistic range is summer.
July, like, yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe even post-deadline, somewhere around there. And it depends, too, on your outfield. Depends on injuries. Todd, the show, Chaz is a bum. He is a clubhouse cancer. Dude is a dork. Tell us how you really feel, Todd.
Jeez.
Tell us how you really feel about Chaz. He thinks that he leaks stuff.
Well, his brother does, right?
Yeah, and how did his brother get it? Jake Myers would be perfectly appreciated in Sugarland. So he has range, but everything else he has is below average. Yeah, probably. I would say his left-handed hitting is fine. Like, he hits lefties pretty good. Where's Yusei Kikuchi? He's in Anaheim with the Angels. I feel like the Myers argument defensive-wise is like Martin Maldonado. Am I crazy? No, I don't think they're too crazy. He's a better hitter than Martin Maldonado. But no, he's a defensive first. He's glove first, like Martin Maldonado. You're not crazy. Chaz is garbage, Mike Gundy voice. Says somebody. A lot of Chaz hate.
Yeah.
Look, Chaz hate here.
I think I'm hopeful that Chaz can find somewhat of an improvement from the year before. And I think that there's a possibility there. I'm not going to like hold my breath that he's going to be fantastic or anything like that. I think he can be better, but that's a very low bar based on how bad he was, that they had to literally just send him back to Sugarland.
He's got to be. I really think he is more of who he was in his first 3 years than he was last year. Will he be as good as he was in his first 3 years? Maybe not, but I can't imagine he'll be as bad as he was last season.
I sure hope.
Like, he's proven enough prior to last year that he's a solid big leaguer, and then he had a dreadful year, and then he'll never be heard of again. I just can't believe that, but it has happened. I mean, look at Jason Lane. 713-780-ESPN. Let's talk about Waymos. What are those? Well, I'll tell you on the other side. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. It's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Philip 68 says, is Dubain still on the team? D-U-B-A-N. I don't know if he's talking about Sean Dubin, who is still on the team, but he's kind of dealing with an injury now. And then it could be Dubon, who very well could be your everyday second baseman. So the answer to either one, Dubin is on the team, Dubon is on the team. Never heard of Dubain. But it's okay, Philip 68. We're not a grammar show. We don't worry about grammar or spelling. We're a bunch of dumbs. We're dumbs on the Killer Bees. Spots are filling fast. Take the day off work and play a fun round of golf with your favorite sports station at the ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Occasional Invitational. It's a great time. It's always a great time. You get to hang out with some friends. You get to hang out with your favorite host. And then you also get to hang out with Blankers. It benefits Kids Meals, which is fantastic, of course. We talked to the CEO of Kids Meals the other day. A great cause. This year's tournament takes place Fat Tuesday, my favorite day of the year. I can relate. March 4, 10:30 a.m. is when everybody would tee off. Wildcat Golf Club, one of the finest courses in the city of Houston. If you are golfing, you're going to receive beverages from Carbach. You're going to drink some good beer, some good cold beer. A lunch, dinner from Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage, one of the best Tex-Mex restaurants in the city. And then also 18 holes of golf. Let's keep that. It's 18. It's not 15 like the stupid TGL. It's 18 holes. You can register now, ESPN975.com. Under the promotions tab, ESPN975.com. Under the promotions tab. Why are you looking at me side-eyed and funny?
Did you see what happened in the TGL?
Yeah, it's my car wreck.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll leave it there because I didn't think it was worthy of making the crawl on ESPN.
It made the crawl?
It was the crawl, and there was multiple. You know how the crawl, normally it's like the score, wow, and then maybe a couple of stats? It was three different screens of the crawl with multiple updates on what happened.
Yeah, I'm out on the TGL.
You were in when it was starting.
I wanted to see what it looked like, and then as soon as I watched the one round of it, I was like, yeah, this isn't going to do it for me. It's not going to do it for me.
It never was something that was going to do it for me.
I was going to check it out. What's the difference between DWI and DUI? Any B cops in the audience? Driving while intoxicated? Driving under intoxication? I don't know the difference. I think it has to do with the level of alcohol in your system. I think it might have to do with like the county you're in. Somebody calls it different than the other. I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't think that's it.
I just call them a Dewey's. That's what I call them.
Yeah, I mean, regardless, one way or another, you're in trouble.
Any team with Dubon as an everyday player is not a serious team, Tyler and Conroe. Yeah, it's fair. It's fair.
It depends, right?
He's a really good defensive player. Really good defensive player. Touches the baseball, doesn't walk, doesn't hit for much power. That's who he is.
Yeah, I was going to say, if Dubon is your center fielder, offensively, he's not bad. He's decent for a center fielder.
He's below average.
I think Jake was a better offensive player last year than Mauricio Dubon.
His OPS is
People don't
under
like
100.
Hearing that.
Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, Dubon was a little better. Dubon was a little better. Myers OPS plus last year, 85. Dubon was 88. Career, Myers 86, Dubon 87. They're about the same level of production offensively.
Okay.
It's like Dubon is kind of the same thing as Jake Myers, except at second base. If he is your everyday second baseman.
He just doesn't look drunk doing it.
Yeah, he seems like he has a little more sense.
Yeah.
A little more IQ.
Yes.
Jake Myers looks like he's always surprised at everything. There's a fly ball. That's shocking.
I've always said he's just the complete deer in the headlights all the time that wonders what's going on if the elevator's getting all the way to the top.
DUI, driving under the influence. Isn't that what we said? Oh, I said driving under intoxication. Yeah, my bad. It is under the influence. I misspoke. My bad. Driving under influence is more minor. Driving while intoxicated is major.
So that's blood alcohol level.
Driving under the influence. I misspoke. My bad. Driving under influence is more minor, while driving while intoxicated is major.
So yeah, it's blood alcohol level.
You'd want a DUI. Yeah, it would be more severe of the two. DWI is not used anymore. It's DUI. DW is associated with drinking, but now you're on drugs drinking and whatever else might fall there. DWI, driving while intoxicated. We said that. DUI can be any substance. Liquor, weed, crack.
Ah.
took a massive leap there at the end, huh? Liquor, weed, crack. That's a giant leap there.
My level of fear on those three is a little different, too.
Pretty strong. Yeah. The last one, yeah, pretty impactful.
DUI, driving under the influence, anything other than alcohol. DWI, driving while intoxicated, is over blood the BAC limit. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line right now. Jerry, who's an expert, I think, is on the line. Jerry, can you tell us your expertise in this field?
Yeah, you got it. You got it mostly right there.
Yes.
And DWI is about exceeding the state limit for intoxication. DUI is two things, one related to any other intoxicating substance, which is controlled substances, like you said, weed, pills, heroin, meth, anything you're on.
Jerry, what do you usually do? What do you like to do whenever you're getting a good little DUI, DWI? What's your poison?
My poison, well, I don't have that poison or I wouldn't have my security clearances, but yeah, that'd be alcohol. But it's also underage drinking. If you're underage and it's alcohol, it falls under DUI, not DWI.
All right. Thank you for the information, Jerry. Appreciate you educating us and not lecturing us like Paul did yesterday.
See that he dropped that on you?
The clearance? The
security clearance.
Yeah.
That was a little bit of a humble brag.
A little bit of a big time.
I figured that's what he was, but I was just checking. Thought it was worth a crack. You shouldn't do either of these things. Driving under the influence, driving while intoxicated.
Don't do
either one of these things.
Thank you
the
for
Killer
that important
Bees
reminder.
Suggest you don't do those things. Which, by the way, if you're in a Waymo, you wouldn't do these things. Have you heard of what Waymos are?
No,
they're
curious,
all over.
I know you guys like this one. I haven't heard of what it is.
I'm scared of them. I've seen them in Vegas. I saw them in Phoenix. I've seen them in Cali. You know where they're coming to soon. What do you mean? They're coming to Houston?
No. But Austin.
Oh, Austin's weird.
Waymo is a
vehicle that is driven by air. I don't know.
Computers.
Like it's a computer. It's AI. AI is driving Waymos. They're like ride shares. You can hop in a Waymo. Yeah. And I saw this. You can hop in a Waymo and they'll drive you around like an Uber, but they do not have human. They're a humanless car.
And they're 24/7. They're more on demand. That's the selling point.
Weren't these initially just like either the Google vehicles or the Google Maps vehicles or the delivery service vehicles?
I thought people drove the Google vehicles.
Some do.
Yeah,
and then others,
I thought those were all
some
manned.
Do and some don't, I thought.
I don't know. But I'm scared of Waymo.
You're right, though. I think it was Domino's Pizza started driverless delivery a few years ago. So I don't know what the first of the origin was in these. But, yeah, there have been some delivery services that have been in on it.
I'm with you in the fact that scares the hell out of me that you know, the driverless vehicle is not something that I trust, that I want to drive near. I mean, there's just too many other things that could go wrong that –
Things could go wrong with trusting a rando that you don't know what they're coming from, what they're on. I mean, I don't see the risk.
So you trust would you trust the Teslas and the cars that drive themselves?
Yeah, I would get in a Waymo.
You would get in a Waymo.
Yeah.
Have you been in a Waymo?
No, I don't live in a market that has one.
I would be
or been to a market
I
that
would,
has one.
I would ride in a Waymo if it was like downtown driving. But if you had to get on a highway, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out too.
I'm out if you have to get
on a highway. I'd probably want to try it downtown first, sure. But I'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
I got a buddy of mine that has a Tesla, and one of our other friends is absolutely terrified to drive in that car because of the fact that he kind of tempts him with the fact that he can put it on autopilot, and it freaks him out.
You're rubbing elbows with the guy who has a Tesla, huh?
Uh-huh.
Only the finest. Uh-huh. I don't know anybody. I don't even know anybody who can rent a Tesla. I have to just watch them from the side, like I'm the people in LA that are watching the OJ chase. That's how I watch Teslas go by.
What was your car in Arizona?
Yay! What did we have? We had a Kia. No, I don't do the rental car places. Actually, encourage you not to get electric because a lot of people don't know how to charge electric.
It up, yeah.
So it's more work for them, and like they have to like pick you up on the side of the road. I would love to drive a Tesla, but no, the Waymos are, I'm a no on the Waymo if it's a highway. It kind of scares me too. Now, if we, let's just say, you know, the government, let's say they got rid of cars, all cars, any sort of human operated vehicles gone, toast, you know, hear me out here. And everybody had to just ride in a Waymo. So all humans no longer drive. Everybody's in a Waymo. Do you think it'd be a better flow of traffic?
I actually do too.
I
think we would, and I also think I would feel more confident at that point because I think that a lot of what I'm worried about is even if the Waymo is driving by the letter of the law, someone's going to run a red or someone's going to do
something
that's going to put you in danger.
Like,
yeah,
like you read the stories, there are have been. Sorry for the grammar there. Paul. I know. Paul's going to be getting on me for that one. But there have been wrecks involving these Waymos. But when you read the report, it's the Waymo was following the traffic laws and someone's running a red light. So I do think if all these cars are automated to the same system, following the laws instead of people doing 20 over the speed limit or running red lights or whatever, you know, humans do, then, yeah, the flow of traffic probably would be better.
I think on average, if everything was a Waymo and we eliminated human driving, I think on average we would have less wrecks. And I think that the traffic would be better.
It would be like individual subway.
Kind of.
Yeah. And I would be fine with that. Because, but I will say this, and if you've noticed this, either one of you guys, with as much as we're on the highways, but the problem now is the people with the Teslas that like to put it on autopilot, it really kind of, even if it's just the way it looks as opposed to how it actually is, the fact that when it's on autopilot, they take like three car lengths with the car in front of them.
Yeah.
So if you're in any kind of bumper to bumper, it's just like, what are we doing? Like they take too much liberty in terms of how much space to be safe.
Well, it's more by the book. I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about here. Like, because when you go through like a traffic school or anything like that, they tell you to give way more distance between cars than we do on a normal basis. So
713-780-ESPN. Your thoughts on Waymos. Would you feel safe in a Waymo? Would you ride in a Waymo? Do you think we'd be more orderly as a society if we eliminated humans driving altogether and went all AI? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business when it comes to replacing your hair with your own hair and giving you a better look, appearance, and self-confidence because of it. Doc Linville does so many things so well, and he's right here in the Houston Med Center. He does spa treatments, Botox, plastic surgery. But what I've had personal experience with is the fact that I've had the NeoGraft procedure done, and I've had PRP treatments, and both of them have helped to get my hair back and keep it back once I got it back with my hairline in front. The one thing that I learned from Doc Linville that's going to be a very big key bullet point in this for all of you is it's not like the sprays and the creams and the foams that you see on TV that everybody is encouraging you to do. That's just a gimmick that just covers up what you've lost, not getting your hair back. This actually is your own hair that you get back. You never lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. So he takes some of it, repurposes it where you need it most. It's almost like re-sodding your lawn. And in no time at all, you're going to see that hair growing. It's going to be there in 6 to 9 months. You'll see the true effects at its best results. And it's going to stay with you for the rest of your life because he's taking it from a place where it's never going to leave. Phenomenal results. Absolutely amazing procedures. And I'm telling you because you're a listener to ESPN 97.5, because you can get a consultation and all the information like I got for absolutely free. People off the street pay $150. You pay nothing if you just go to 975hair.com and set up your free consultation. They're going to explain to you how everything works, the procedures that they do, and why they're effective, and then they're going to leave it all in your hands. No signing on the dotted line, no money out of pocket, no commitment to be made, just a question and answer session after they inform you how they can help you with your particular case. May show you some before and afters of other people like me. I can't speak highly enough about Doc and his staff. Check him out today. Tell him I sent you by. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5.